All right, welcome back to the Weekend Warrior Podcast, presented by WTP Sports. This is episode 43. That would be the Nate Ebner episode, the Kendrick Perkins episode, or perhaps even the Bob Beers episode. He wore 43 with the Bruins on his first stop at the Bruins. So this week I am answering listener questions, and with me I have good friend of the show and recurring co-host, Artie Januario.
Officially recurring guest. I love it.
That's right. That's right. How's it going, man?
Going good. Going awesome. I am enjoying the weather down here in Austin. We got the South by Southwest Festival coming in, so I'm going to try to get as much free food and free music as I can. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. We're dealing with snow and broken trees and icy roads, and it's going to be 90 this weekend.
And that is exactly why I moved down here.
And we all hate you, but that's okay. So,
all right, well, that's great. Anyways.
All right, so let's get it started. All right, so we have a few really good questions. I'm going to start with one from Dave. He's actually living in Florida, so nice and warm down there as well. From him, he's a good friend of the show as well. But Dave asked about the expectations for the Bruins and the Celtics. And so what he's looking at, and he said, you know, they're both very high right now. People expecting the conference finals or even the finals for both of them. But is that really what their expectations are? Is anyone going to lose sleep over the fact that if they don't get there? You know, even compared to what the Patriots felt, what everyone felt about the Patriots after they lost in the Super Bowl, will people feel like that about the Bruins or Celtics if they lose in the second round of the playoffs? Mm. You know, and so go ahead, Artie, you start.
Yeah, I still think the Bruins are 2 or 3 years away. I think they're really catching lightning in the bottle. I think they have an amazing young core coming up. But I think they're kind of playing over their heads at the moment, personally. I think they're going to run into like a Tampa or a Washington in the playoffs and kind of get exposed a little bit. I mean, I could be completely wrong, but I won't be as – even if the Bruins lose in, say, the second round, I won't be as disappointed. The Celtics, I honestly think, should go to the NBA Finals this year. Now, I think everybody knows whoever's coming out of the West is winning the Finals. I don't care who goes from the East, but I know Toronto is kind of getting slept on. I know LeBron is LeBron and it's the playoffs and whatever, but I still think that Cleveland team's a wreck. So I think Toronto's really the only one standing in the way of the Celtics going to the finals. And I know they had Hayward only last 5 minutes and they're asking the rookies to do a lot, or the young guys, but I still think they're the best team in the East. So I think they should go to the finals, and I'll be a little disappointed if they don't.
Right. Well, I think it's true. I mean, you know, I think the expectations are certainly higher for the Celtics than they are for the Bruins. Mm-hmm. Although the Bruins have been playing so well, you know, Cassidy really pulled the right strings there when he benched Tuukka for a while and had Hudobin in there, and Tuukka's been playing out of his mind.
I think he's the exact right guy for that job.
Ah, it's great. You know, yeah. And you need those, you know, they have a young core, like you said, and you want that young core to be aggressive and to play through things. And sometimes they're going to have nights where they suck, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. They need to play through that, and he's allowed them to do that. I think, to me, I understand what you're saying there. I think you're probably right about that. Like, they might run into a team in the playoffs. But I can certainly see, especially, you know, I feel like the Celtics fans are the most forgiving fan base I think I've ever seen in my entire life. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah, sure. The Green Tamers, for sure.
And Yeah, they're like, oh, well, you know, they'll get him next year. And Hayward wasn't, you know, even if Hayward comes back, Hayward wasn't 100%, and Tatum will have a year under his belt. And then we got hopefully a top five pick this year, assuming that the Lakers don't get out of the 2-6 range. So it's like, you know, it's kind of funny, but you start looking at it like, well, maybe, yeah, okay, we can understand why the Celtics lost, even though they should have won. You know, Jaylen Brown wasn't ready. Jason Tatum wasn't ready. You know, so you can hear the excuses kind of coming already. For the Bruins, I'm with you there, though. I feel like it's almost the other way for the Bruins. I feel like the Bruins it's like, man, they need to step on it and really kind of make a push. I know it's Cassie's first year, but you know, to me, I just, Tuca is really the one for me. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like if Tuca doesn't prove himself in the playoffs this year, I might be out on Tuca, to be honest with you. And I know he's had a great regular season, and he's had great regular seasons in the past, but typically he just hasn't performed quite as well in the playoffs. And so if he can't get it done, if he can't bring him deep into the playoffs, and if not even into the Stanley Cup Finals, and or even winning the Stanley Cup Finals, to me, I'm like, okay, why are we paying this guy $7 million a year? Just,
one of the things about the Bruins, too, that worries me a little bit is their core is getting older. Bergeron, Chara, even Marchand, Krejci, Backes, those guys are all pretty much north of 30 at this point. I mean, Chara is almost 40. Yeah. So the window to win with those guys is starting to close a little bit. I do like what the Bruins did, though, with picking up Gionta as like a 13th man, kind of, you know, maybe play 5 minutes a night and tell the young kids to shut up once in a while. But I think they're still a couple of years away from really seeing that whole thing out.
Yeah. I mean, I think they took their, you know, they're taking their shot this year. They picked up Nash, and Nash, I think, is just a 1 year deal. And so they're just saying, let's just give it a shot. What the hell, you know?
Without, you know, blowing it up almost. You know what I mean? Without exactly. Really going into go for it now mode, they said, all right, let's make some tweaks and maybe get, like I said, catch lightning in a bottle and see what happens.
Right, right. Which is why I think they didn't go after Ryan McDonagh, because it would have mean they would have to give up too much. Mm-hmm. You know, so they said, all right, we'll trade some smaller
Carlo or somebody like that. Yeah.
Right, and there's no need to do that. Like you say, if they are still a few years away. So, so yeah, it's funny. We're on opposite ends of the spectrum here. I kind of feel like the Bruins have a little bit more to prove. Yeah. And the Celtics, I just feel like the Celtics are going to get a free pass no matter what, as long as they don't lose in the first round, which I can't imagine happening. I think the Celtics are going to get pretty much a free pass. You know what I mean? And so I want them to get to the finals. I think they should get to the finals. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I could see a lot of people saying, oh, you know, they're on the way up and this and that, you know. And whereas the Bruins, I'm like, okay, you better make it, you know, at least two, if not three rounds for sure.
Yeah.
So we'll see. All right, what's the next question, my friend?
All right, let's go. I think this one's kind of fun. What do you think the New York Giants do at number two, a quarterback or Saquon Barkley?
That's beautiful. So that's from my boy, Derek. Derek, we appreciate you, Derek. I'll tell you what, man, here's the issue for me, right? And this is kind of the whole Cleveland Browns debate. Mm-hmm. The only thing worse than not taking a quarterback early is taking the wrong quarterback early.
Because then it's 5 years off the plate. Yeah,
and
it's
that's just the like, thing. You know what I mean? Right. You don't take a guy and you lose a year. And if he's a stud, well, then okay, you missed out on a stud. But it's like, you know, what do you want them to do? So to me, and especially now, they got a new GM over there. You know, Gettleman's the new GM. And it's kind of like, you know, you're tied to it. If you draft a quarterback at number two, that's your guy and you're tied to him forever. Yep. And if he sucks, you're fired, basically. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
so pretty much. Like, you go down with
so,
him. Yeah.
Exactly. And so you just – I wonder if they'll take a quarterback there, if they fall in love with one of them, or if they take Barkley. I wonder, too – and I know running back has kind of come back into play. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if I'm the Giants, if I don't try to trade out of that spot, man. It's been a lot of trades happening at the top of the draft in the past few years. Mm-hmm. And I just think teams look at it and they say, well, why I can get so much more and trade out of the 1, 2, or 3 spot and move back to what, like 7 to 10 and still get a phenomenal player, but not have to, but I can get a guy on the defensive line or a cornerback or something like that, that realistically I probably shouldn't be taking at number two.
And you almost,
you know, and so
you almost let the rest of the draft order make the decision for you by doing that.
Right.
You know, if the best player available is a quarterback at, say, you trade down to like the 11th spot, then it's like, okay, that makes a little bit more sense.
Right. Right. Cause you probably picked up an extra first rounder in there as well.
Yeah. Some of the reports coming out are that they're sticking with Eli and kind of riding him into the ground. Man, Barkley looks good. I wonder if he's going to be like, just one of those athletic freak type of guys that doesn't translate a ton. almost like a Reggie Bush, but man, he looks good. Barkley looks awesome.
He looks unbelievable, doesn't
he? He really does.
I mean, and then he goes to the combine and he just freaking blows everybody out of the water and does, you know, over 20 reps and runs a 4 something. Like, he's a freaking monster.
Yeah, he is.
And so, but it, again, like, I'm like, okay, you got Zeke Elliott, you got Fournette, like, it's coming back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Kamara really kind of sparked things when people were like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
But is Kamara the same guy without Melvin, without Mark Ingram? Like, I don't know. You know, right. So it's like, does he need that complimentary guy? And then what kind of guy will Barkley be in the NFL? There's just no way to know.
Behind an offensive line like the Giants, you know what I mean?
Man, yeah. I have a hard time. I'd have a really hard time taking Barkley at number 2.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe someone falls in love with him, and maybe he deserves it. Maybe he's going to be the second best player in the draft. I don't know. But, like,
I'm of the mind where you can find running backs a dime a dozen in, like, the third round. You know, I think you can just – you can find a lot of guys who can – if you build an offensive line or in front of them, they can – you can make it work.
Well, Kamara was a second-round pick, you know, so yeah, it's not like, you know, and so you just kind of bring those guys in and say, look, I mean, he's a little bit one-dimensional. Maybe they didn't love his running style, but he did exactly what, you know, everyone needed him to do. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'd go top 5 on a running back, and I don't know if I'd go quarterback at number 2 either.
I don't love this quarterback draft as much as other people do. I mean, I like it, but it's – I feel like people are really overrating it at this point. Yeah. I think
that happens every year, right?
Of course, right? Everybody's, you know, there's going to be 5 quarterbacks in the top 10. It's like, no, there's not. Like, you got to, like, pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah.
But, I just – you know that there's no clear-cut winner when you don't know if it's going to be Darnold or Rosen or Josh Allen. It's like, you know, so why – chase that guy at number 2 if they're all kind of bunched together.
Right. And that's kind of, I think that's the big takeaway, right? I mean, one thing they could do is trade up to number 1 because typically when the Browns trade back, they trade out of a spot where there's a superstar quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really want the superstar quarterback, maybe you trade up to number 1, you get the extra karma for trading with the Browns, and then you draft your superstar quarterback at number 1 overall. And so, you know, it's just kind of like the universe's way of saying, hey, look, I mean, yeah, that's what the Browns did. They just pass on those great quarterbacks, you know?
Right.
but at the same time, and it's so funny, but I was thinking about this, like, people talk trash about the Browns and stuff and everything like that. But, like, would Deshaun Watson have been the player he was this year on the Browns? Like,
no, Lord, no.
Like, so it's like, you know, You look at that and say, those idiots drafted a quarterback at number 10. We knew Deshaun Watson couldn't play football in the NFL. And it's like, you know, and meanwhile, he goes to Houston and has the probably, you know, if not the best receiver in the game, the top – one of the top 3 best receivers in the game.
For sure. I was going to say, he has Deshaun Watson and he has Will Fuller, who can just toss it up to. And,
right.
And so, a lot easier on him.
A little bit. Yeah. So, I mean, so I think that that's, you know, that's good. But I will tell you, man – speaking about the Browns, and someone asked me about the Browns kind of – I didn't actually write down their actual question, but they just joking around said, like, why the Browns even exist anymore. But I was like, you know, the Browns are close, man. And I know it's crazy. They went 0-16 last year, but like –
we were saying that in our preview of the season last year. I remember we loved their draft last year, and I think they're going to stumble into a good draft this year too. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, they got two top 5 picks this year. I mean, like, so – you know, they have these picks and you just look at it and just say, hey, I mean, you never know. Like, you never know what can happen. And that's even – it's funny with the Texans, but the Browns trade back with the Texans. The Texans draft Watson at 10, and Watson looks like an absolute stud.
Mm-hmm.
But then he gets hurt, and the Texans absolutely suck. And they end up with the number 5 pick overall, and now the Browns end up with the 5
pick. So the top like, 5 pick, yeah.
So it's crazy, right? So that's kind of the funny thing where you look at it and say the Browns could be there. I mean, they have Josh Gordon if he can stay off the weed, like Stephen A. would say. They have Corey Coleman, like they have some pieces on defense, like so.
Yeah.
You know. It sounds crazy to say an 0-16 team could be like decent, but if they get a quarterback that can actually play, like maybe they can do something and win like 6 games. I mean, 6 games would be a huge improvement. Whatever they do.
Four, like just.
Right? Something. Whatever they do this year, they will be infinitely better than what they were last year.
Oh, yeah.
Because you, right? Because you could multiply the zero wins by any number you want, and you're still going to get zero. So whatever they're going to do, that they're going to defy the mathematical odds and be, you know, significantly better than they were last year. So anyway. So let's go to all right, I'm going to go to Dean. That's Dean Pauly. So it's at Dean underscore Pauly WTP. He says, does Kenny Britt come back to the Patriots mean that someone else is leaving?
I will say, as much as I love him, he's my Austin buddy. I've seen him down here. I wouldn't be surprised if Amendola took a lot of money to go somewhere like San Francisco. You know, Cleveland's got a lot of money. Tampa has a ton of money. I wouldn't fault him for taking like a $4 million a year deal instead of like a $1.5 million a year deal from the Patriots, which is what he's going to get because it's what he gets every year. So I wouldn't be super shocked if Amendola left. But, I don't know. I don't think Britt's going to – I think if anything, it's going to mean Philip Dorsett might go.
Right.
But, yeah, I think if any of, like, the big-name guys, it would probably be Amendola.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you kind of look at it and say, what doesn't it have to be? Now, obviously, Cooks' name now has been thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to be trading Cooks? Are they going to be – But I mean, I can't imagine them trading Brandon Cooks for like, you know, we floated out that he was going to get traded for like a second round pick. So they traded a late first round for him. He had a pretty good year and they trade him for a mid second round. It's just like, it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I guess if they really want to move on from him, but you know, if Britt, now when it's not just Britt signing, right? They said they expect big things out of him this year.
Mm-hmm.
So you get in, so you have Kenny Britt, Malcolm Mitchell, Julian Edelman, Brandon Cooks, Danny Amendola, Philip Dorsett, right? And did I say Kenny Britt? So that's like six or seven. Like, that's a lot. That's a lot of receivers that you have on your team.
That's more.
And I left out Hogan. Hogan's the one I left out. So,
So
there's seven receivers. Mm-hmm. And realistically, okay, you can take Dorsett out of there. But if you're expecting big things from Britt, now you're saying we're going to get significant contributions from six receivers? It's crazy. Yeah. And so, you know, to me, it means that someone's on the way out. It could be Amendola. Amendola is the one that makes the most sense.
Yeah.
Although I'd freaking hate to see that happen because I love it.
Oh, I would too. I wouldn't doubt it with his age, his injury history. You know, he's got a couple rings. So it's like, if I was him, I would maybe, you know, go to like a warm weather city or something.
Yeah, take a big deal and go somewhere
else.
You know?
Right.
And obviously, you may not get into play in the playoffs for that, but. Mm-hmm. It is what it is, you know? So, all right, next one. What we got?
I'm going to go next. Let's see. What sports memory do you hold the fondest?
Love it. Okay, that's Prunty. Appreciate you. At WTP Prunty, we appreciate you there. Sports memory for me that I hold the fondest? Shit, man. It's got to be it's got to be the 0-1 Super Bowl, man. It's just got to be like the, just, you know, like, and I know the 0-4 thing with the Patriots, with the Red Sox, them coming back from down 3-0 against the Yankees and stuff. And, but that 0-1, you know, that 0-1 season to me was just, it was the first time we won a championship in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously I was alive for the 86 Super Bowl, for the 86 championship for the Celtics, but I was two. So it's like, I didn't really, you know, technically I was living, but I don't remember it.
Yeah.
That was the first one for us. And it was just the fact that they won it. And it was, you know, I was a senior in high school, so I felt like part of that. I like felt part of it. I had season tickets at the time. So I was like, I was all in. Right. And I mean, when they won, dude, I just remember losing my freaking mind and screaming at the television because Madden was telling them not to drive down the field. And
oh yeah, yeah.
I remember. I just remember
Patriots. You got to think about playing for overtime here.
Yeah. Well, we talk about like the worst commentary here. But I'll tell you what, people people shit on Madden for that, but right away, dude, like as they were going, he was like, I kind of like what the Patriots are doing here.
Yeah, you know, I remember what I mean? That.
And he even said, he's like, as a coach and as an analyst, I wouldn't have done what they're doing, but they had the, he didn't say balls, but he wanted to, but he's like, they had the balls to go for it.
Yep.
And they did, and now they're doing it. You know what I mean? And that comes with the famous line where he's like, you know, Brady spikes the ball, and he's like, what Tom Brady just did gives me goosebumps. Yep. And I'm like, oh, my God, man. That was unbelievable. You know?
I'm getting goosebumps just hearing that. Yeah.
Right, dude?
I'll never forget it. Yeah, that game when they won. Now, my mom's not a big sports fan at all. She makes fun of us and gives a shit for yelling at the TV and everything. She was jumping on the couch when they won that game. She was flipping out. So that was definitely a big one.
I remember, so like I said, I was a senior in high school. So like me and all my buddies, we actually went, my buddies, friend of a friend basically had like a huge, parents had like a huge party. They had like TVs upstairs, they had TVs downstairs. And we were in like a guest bedroom in the basement with the door shut. And there was like 10 of us watching, and it was on like a freaking 15-inch TV, dude. And we were like freaking out the whole time, dude. And so the game ends, and we all pile into like 6 different cars, and we're just driving around neighborhoods, honking the horns and shit. And there's this like middle-aged guy who's just shit-faced. And mm-hmm. he's like, his family's outside with him, and he's just like celebrating, dude. And he's like so happy, and his like little like 10-year-old daughter's with him or whatever. And he's just like screaming like it was nuts, dude. And so, and we're like it was like a cul-de-sac, and we're like driving around the cul-de-sac, beeping our horns, and he's like outside dancing with his daughter. I just remember like,
that's awesome.
That's like the best night of that guy's life. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was really cool. So yeah,
I got a couple. One of them was actually the Snow Bowl that year. So I was watching at home with my dad, and I remember after we won that game, this is just one of those moments that sticks out. My best friend Joey lived down the street, and I just ran to his house, and there was like a bunch of kids in his yard, and we just started playing football in his yard in the snow. But that always sticks out to me. Like, we were celebrating by doing the same thing. And then I'll never forget the day that the Red Sox won the World Series, like the day of the game, that morning, I'm sitting there, I'm getting ready to go to class in college, and my dad's sitting on the couch having breakfast. And I'll never forget just the way he's like, I could write a book about, like, I can just literally picture this in my head. He looked up from a cereal, he goes, the Red Sox are going to win the fucking World Series tonight. It gives me goosebumps thinking about it, because it started to hit us. Like, yeah, we're going to sweep this team. Like, we're going to win tonight. Like, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And it was just, I'll never forget that moment as long as I live.
It's crazy, right? Yeah. And it's so funny, because the 2004 season is kind of like, it's kind of like the Miracle on Ice, right? Where it's like, you know, the Miracle on Ice wasn't technically for the gold medal, but like it might as well have been. Like, you know, we came back on the Yankees and beat the Yankees, and it was like,
that was the worst.
Oh, now we got to play the Cardinals. But
we're nobody was beat. Literally, nobody was going to beat us that year. Yeah, after in the World Series, you know.
Right, right, and it was just, you know, that was wild, you know, and so I will say, so after that, after the Super Bowl, I was a senior in high school. So after the Super Bowl, I said to my dad, I'm like, I want to go to the parade, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, I don't know if you can go. Like, you can't go. Like, you know, you can't really miss a day of school. And so I'm like, Jesus, like, that sucks, you know? So the parade's Tuesday. Monday, day after the Super Bowl, I get a letter in the mail from Hofstra University that I'm accepted into Hofstra. And now I ended up not going to Hofstra, but that was one of the schools I applied to. And so I called my dad, and I was like, Dad, I got into college. I got into Hofstra. Like, you know, I'm going to be a college student next year. And he's like, oh my God. He's like, congratulations. And he goes, guess what? And I'm like, what? He's like, you're going to the parade tomorrow. I'm like, let's go. You know? It was awesome. You know? So he may have come home Monday night and said, you're going anyways. But it was like, for me, it was like the best thing, because I'm like, all right, I'm a college student. Like, let's go. You know what I mean?
We could do a whole podcast just on parade moments. I remember the Panthers, the Panthers parade. It was, you know, the first time they did like the rolling rally, and they stopped at City Hall Plaza. And I'll never forget, there was this guy next to us, and he's looking at us. He's like, yeah. And he holds up this bottle, and it's clearly filled with piss. And he just goes, fuck shit up. And he just launches it. And then he just triumphantly walks away with both of his hands up like Rocky. And we just fucking lost it laughing. Oh, and we just, man, we'll forever just go fuck shit up and just start dying laughing to each other.
That's hysterical, dude. So that one parade's the only parade I've ever been to. I've never been to another one.
Really? I went last year when they beat Atlanta. I was at work, and my boss goes, "You got to go." I was like, "What?" And it was snowing out that day. He goes, "Go." He goes, "Clock out." He goes, "Go and just be there." And I will forever to this day say that me and Tom Brady made eye contact, and I might have blacked out a little bit. But it was awesome. It was really cool because I was a block away from me. So I was like, "I got to go," and just sprinted over there.
No, it's cool, you know? Mm. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I just never go now with the kids and everything. It's like,
of course, yeah.
Have to go, you know what I mean? But
they're fun. If you're close, it's fun, but it gets right. A little rowdy.
It's tough, you know? You got to get in. It's like a full day event, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, let's get into the next one. I'm going to go with Shane on this one. Shane says, with the combine over and Brady's seasons running out, numbered, do you feel like the Pats will find Brady's replacement in this year's draft? And if so, who's the guy?
I say no. I don't think they're going to put all our eggs in this draft basket. I could be way wrong, but I think Brady's got 3 more years left. And I don't know. I just don't think it's going to be this year. I think this year they're going to be fine going with Brady and Hoyer, and they're going to try and – I think they see the needs on defense. They still had the number one overall offense last year. So I think it's going to be almost an entirely defensive draft, except sneakily, I think they might take a tight end in the first or second round.
I wouldn't be surprised to see that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't think so. But if they do take a guy, I think everybody now is on the Kyle Lauletta bandwagon. Navy kid, you know, goes through his progressions really well, processes information quick. He's everything that Bill Belichick's pants get tight over. So yeah. If they take somebody, I think it's going to be Lauletta in like the 4th round. But they might take somebody late this year and then take somebody again next year. I think at this point, if they do take somebody this year, I would just take somebody every year. And just if it hits, it hits. You know,
well, I think that that's the plan. You know what I mean? It's not, I don't think that they're okay. We put it this way. I don't think that they're taking a quarterback in the first round this year. Right. But,
No way.
I think that they're going to be focused. I think they're focused on moving forward, trying to find the next guy in those middle rounds. Right.
Yeah.
They did it with Jimmy G. They did it again with Jacoby. Like They're trying to identify guys that could be good, but you know, need a little bit of polishing, but that's okay because you're going to play behind Brady anyways for 2 or 3 years at the very least. So they're not certainly not panicking, but I mean, I would literally, like you said, just draft a guy every year. What the hell? Yeah. I mean, what the hell you get to lose?
I think they know too, and a lot of fans take this for granted. They're not going to draft another Tom Brady because there's not going to be another Tom Brady. They're looking for a very good quarterback, like a top 10 type of guy, like a Carson Wentz or, you know, Jared Goff, like
Jimmy G.
Or Jimmy G, exactly. Like,
you're
not going to get Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers. Like, that is once in a generation talents. The chances of that happening again is slim to none. So, you know, at this point, you build up the team. You ride out Brady as long as he wants to play. And like you said, you just draft guys who can slot into the system and, you know, the engine keeps humming for the most part.
Well, I think, too, what's interesting is that, you know, it's kind of like the coaches and the GMs have kind of caught on to what the hell they need to do. Mm-hmm. So, like, they're not just drafting the guy with the biggest arm anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, like Jamarcus Russell and some of those schmucks. You know, it's like, they're looking at the whole package. They're looking at the mental side of it. How does he, you know, how does he go through his progressions? How does he deal with stress? How does he deal with, you know, pressure? How does he do? So it's like, you know, you can't necessarily find those diamonds in the rough as much because of Tom Brady, because now of Jimmy G, because of some of these guys, like most of these really good quarterbacks are being drafted early. Now, you still have Kirk Cousins who got taken a little bit later. Mm-hmm. You have Jimmy G, you have Brissett. But, like, as far as starters are concerned in the NFL and, like, legit starters, the majority of them now are first-round picks where it's, like, just a few years ago it was, like, half. You know, yeah. So it's, like, it started to go a little bit more on the other side of it. Because it's like if you want that quarterback, you need to draft him early, right? You still have Russell Wilson. You still have, you know, Jimmy G and Jacoby. Mm-hmm. And, well, Jacoby's not really the starter, but, you know, whatever, if Luck's hurt. But, like, for the most part, you look around the league and it's like most of these guys are early picks.
Carson,
you
know, Wentz, Mahomes, Jared Goff, Mariota, right. Mahomes, yeah, right. Watson.
Winston, yeah. Like, you know, so now it's like all these young quarterbacks are young, good quarterbacks being drafted in the first round. And they're panning out. Mm-hmm. And whereas, like, you know, it was before, it was like, okay, you take three or four quarterbacks in the first round, and one, maybe two will pan out. Now it's like three or four of them are panning out, and most of them aren't failing. You know right. what I mean? Unless it's Johnny Manziel, you know?
Back in the Matt Leiner, Johnny Manziel's right. young days, yeah.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right, what we got next?
I'll throw this one in for fun really quick. Who do you think John Cena will face at WrestleMania 34? Even though they are trying to swerve you otherwise, I think it's going to be The Undertaker. I think it's going to be a dumb match. Undertaker can barely move anymore. WrestleMania is probably going to suck this year. It's going to be like 7 hours long. I could do my own little side story on WrestleMania. I will save you guys the nerdgasm of that. But Undertaker, John Cena, WrestleMania 34.
I'll tell you what, I almost went with that. I have no idea about wrestling at all, but I was like, Undertaker? Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like the fact that I would have gotten that right shows you how wrong
here.
It is.
He lives around here, the Undertaker. He lives around Austin, Texas. Really? He lives around here somewhere. Here's a fun story for people. I used to be so afraid of the Undertaker that we used to go to live like matches and stuff, and back in the day they used to tape like four wrestling shows in a row, so you were at the Worcester Centrum, DCU Center now, you were there for like 5-6 hours, and they would have guys come out like four, like I saw Razor Ramon wrestle four times in one day, and he would just like change the color of his, you know, tights. And so anyways, The Undertaker was coming up, and he was a good guy, and I was like 8 years old, and I was still afraid of him. So God bless my mother. She took me outside, and we sat in the car while my dad and Lisa, my sister Lisa, were inside watching all the wrestling. And I was sitting outside, and we were like sitting in the car, and all the wrestlers who were done wrestling were like coming out for the night. They were done and they were just like in their gym clothes. And The Undertaker came out and he saw me sitting in the car and he put his face right in the window. And then he just like, hey, and he said hi to me. I was like, hi. And then he stopped and like talked to him for a second. And he ended up being like this really cool guy. And that's how I got over my fear of The Undertaker, kids.
Wow. So. Holy shit. What a story that is, dude. That's wild.
I love telling that story.
That's fantastic. Oh, imagine that, dude. He just walks up to your car. I was like, hey, what's
up? Oh, yeah, dude. I met everybody that night. Gorilla Monsoon. Who else was there? Ric Flair was there. Razor Ramon. The horribly offensive Tatanka, who was a Native American, not Native American guy. The big red mohawk.
Yikes.
That was a fun night.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the next one. This one's from Joey Gloucester. So, Joey, first of all, he gave us a shout-out on the Mac and Goo podcast on Thursday. Today, I guess. So we appreciate him. It's at Joey Gloucester, Gloster. So follow him. He's a good follow on Twitter. But he said, have you ever been to an iconic game that had one of the following? A no-hitter, perfect game, no-hitter, perfect game. Four home runs by one player, 50 points or more for a Celtics player, a hat trick, or a brutal injury?
No. Well, I've seen a hat trick way back in the day. I saw one. I think it was Sergei Samsonov or something like that. I saw Manny Ramirez hit three home runs in one game once.
Oh, God.
And the closest I've ever come to a no-hitter, I'll never forget it. I went to go see It was a day game. It was the 2004 season. It was Sox Tampa, and Pedro threw a 16 strikeout shutout.
Jesus Christ.
Oh my God, it was unbelievable. The place was just fucking electric. I'll never forget that game. We were up such shitty seats, but when there was a Pedro game happening, like every Pedro game was iconic. It was just like, dude, it was like Woodstock. It was just such a different atmosphere than any sporting event I've ever been to.
Yeah, he's probably the most electric player of all time.
He's like, you know, they always say there's going to be three or four players that you tell your grandkids about. It's going to be Pedro.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I remember we went to an Expos game and we sat first baseline. And he struck out 17, I think, that game. And there was one guy came up, and I think first pitch was a curveball, and the guy had no shot. And then second pitch was a fastball, and he just blew it right by him. And then the third pitch was a changeup. And I mean,
I think Pedro,
man, that guy swung and was in the dugout before the ball hit the catcher's mitt. Like it was
think Pedro's changeup is the best pitch of all time.
Oh, it's just mean.
It's not even right. Yeah.
Oh, God. Dude, he was freaking unbelievable. So
that's my close to having, you know, iconic you moment.
I get the only brutal injury. I mean, talking about brutal injury. I mean, I was there. I was at when Brady tore his ACL in 08. I was also there when Mo Lewis almost killed Drew Bledsoe. And last game Bledsoe ever started. So,
I heard people.
I guess that's.
I heard people could like really hear that from like 30 rows up.
Bro, he got hit so freaking hard, man. Yeah. I mean, his face mask was like bent. It was nuts. And then he just got back up and was like, "All right, I'm going back in."
I know. Like,
what the hell? He's
fucking lunatic.
He was a warrior, dude. Mm-hmm. So I was at that game. I was at the other game that I was at, and it was a historic comeback in 08 in the ALCS game 5 of the ALCS against Tampa. The Red Sox were down 7-0 in the bottom of the seventh and came back to win that game. And I remember sitting in the stands. So I went with my sister-in-law and Pedroia hits an RBI single to make it 7-1. When there's two guys on and Ortiz steps.
Oh, I remember this game. Yep.
And we were sitting in the grandstand, right field grandstand. And, and my sister-in-law and I just looked at each other like, it's going to happen. Like, you just knew. Like, Ortiz stepped up, two guys on, down 7-1, and we just looked at each other like, he's gonna hit a home run. Like, it's going to happen at this at-bat, dude. I'm getting freaking chills even talking about him, dude. But we just knew. Like, you just had that feeling, dude. And he gets up there and just smacks one in the bullpen, and you're just like, oh, my God, here we go. You know? And, like, and they came back and ended up winning. I think 8-7 was the final, and they lost in seven games down in Tampa, but it was like brutal because it was an elimination game. It's the largest comeback for the Red Sox. Oh, yeah, it's the largest comeback ever on the brink of elimination, and it's the second largest comeback in the history of the game behind game 4 of the 1929 World Series. So it's like, So it was pretty rare, you know.
So like the live ball era, it's the biggest comeback, basically.
Exactly.
Live ball era won't be after that, but
yeah. So and then so, but my sister-in-law Juliana was at Derek Lowe's no hitter at Fenway, and he lived down the street from her.
Oh, Jesus.
And so on one Halloween, he was passing out candy and signing autographs, and so she like got her ticket. And went over to his house, and he signed her ticket. So it's like
awesome.
So not only did she see the no hitter, but then she also got the ticket signed by Derek Lowe. So that was pretty cool.
Best. That Tampa series. I remember it just felt like BJ Upton and Evan Longoria had about 12 home runs each that series.
That was brutal,
dude. It felt like every at bat they got like a waist high changeup and just parked it every time. It was those guys just absolutely murdered us.
Well, you know, I'm a miserable person to watch a game with because I yell.
You know what I'm saying? So let me just say, I'll never forget. We went to a game once. And you weren't there for whatever reason. And me and my dad went, and the guys who sit in front of you turn around and they go, hey, where's the loud guy?
I mean, it's just like, dude, I'm like, oh, and I'm so negative. But it's funny because I'm so outwardly negative. Yeah. But then in my head, I'm like, okay, I know there's 10 seconds left and then down by 40, but there's a chance maybe that it's just like I'm working through the fucking mathematical seven probabilities in my head.
You know what I mean? And then, yeah.
Right. You know what I mean? So it's like, yep. But outwardly, I'm so negative. And I remember that game. I was like, because they got killed. They were getting killed. I mean, it was 7-0, right? Dice mm-hmm. K pitched that game.
Oh,
and he got shelled the first two innings. And it was like 5-0 after three. And I was like, mm-hmm. they suck. Like, just leave. Tampa's going to be celebrating on the field. I can't do this.
Yep.
And Juliana is like, would you just shut the hell up? And I'm like, it sucks. They're terrible. You know what I mean? Oh, my God. And
I remember.
And it was unbelievable.
It might have been that year. No, it actually was that year. I saw a game where the Red Sox beat the Rangers 19-17.
Oh,
and it was started, and I think it was his only start, by Charlie Zink, who was a knuckleballer for the Red Sox that they brought up for a spot start. And I'll never forget that guy's name. He gave up like 5 runs in the first inning, and they won 19-17. The game was like 5 hours long, and it was a regulation 9-inning game. It was fucking ridiculous.
Oh, my God.
Mm.
Charlie Zink is, I think, cousins with Martin Lead, I think. That's a periodic table.
That's a periodic
table joke.
That. Yes. Usually he's got the math jokes, but this time he's going chemistry.
So, all right, let's get to the next question before everyone tunes out here.
What else we got? Let me see. Are you satisfied with the JD Martinez deal?
I love it. I love it. That one's from Chris. Appreciate you, Chris. Love it. Love it. I mean, I just think they had to do something. They needed to do something. And he may not be the best player ever, but he's a hell of a lot better than whatever they had last year.
Oh, yeah.
And they need that right-handed power guy.
Yep.
And Hanley just isn't going to cut it, obviously, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we'll see. I mean, you never know what Hanley's going to do, because you just never know what Hanley's going to do because he's a freaking loose cannon. But if Hanley could somehow put it together, and you have Hanley and him and Mookie,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's scary. That's scary.
Yeah, it is. For sure.
You know, so,
and even if Moreland, you know, Mitchie Twobag sticks with his, you know, 22 home runs or whatever he's going to hit, and I think it really lengthens the lineup. I do not want to see him playing almost any defense because he is literally below replacement level in defense by about 7 runs.
Right.
He is just fucking terrible defensively. But I'm telling you, man, his bat is pretty much top 5 in the league. So it was necessary. And they got him at the price they wanted. He can opt out in 2 years, and it'll be his, age 32 year season.
Yeah,
so he can collect another pretty big payday. So I think he's going to be motivated for 2 years and then cash in 2019 or in 2020.
Right. You know? And the Red Sox needed to do something. I mean, frankly, they needed to do something to keep up, you know, to keep up with the Yankees.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, so, yeah. And I like it. I like it. So I do like it. I'm going to give you another question from Chris, peppering us with questions here. But he said, you know, do you think the essence of NBA basketball is broken? And if so, how do you think it can be fixed? Right. And so I think what he's alluding to there is the whole FBI scandal going on. You know, what do you think?
I mean, NCAA, you mean?
Correct. Did I say
yeah,
NCAA?
You said NBA. Yeah. So correct. The essence of NCAA. See, I think the FBI stuff is just telling us what we already know. I mean, if you pay any attention, you know these kids are back to the UMass days with Marcus Camby, you know, with the hot tub full of ladies of the night of ill repute. I mean, they're not – then they try to mask it and be like, oh, this kid got double lunch from a booster, so, you know, he's got to sit for a year. It's like, they don't care. These athletes are making so much money for them. you know, they're going to throw Bentleys at them once in a while and, you know, buy their mama a new house and, you know, lace them up with new Jordans and stuff like that. They're going to do as much as they can without out and out paying them for the most part. And I'm sure some guys do get paid under the table.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't think it's going to cripple college basketball. People are still going to love March Madness. They're still going to be competitive. I do think that the one-and-done thing has to go away. I think you're either going to let guys come in out of high school or make them stay 3 years like college football.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest issue for me because, you know, guys like Calipari, you literally say, oh, we're an NBA factory. It's like, well, no, if you want to really emphasize student-athletes, make them go to school for a little bit.
Right. Well, yeah, and that's the issue that I have. I mean, you know, I'm working on an article right now for WTP Sports about the NCAA and just how much of a joke it is.
Oh, it's right up there with FIFA as the worst organization in all of sports.
Right. And it's just like, you know, they take advantage of the – I think, you know, in my opinion, they take advantage of the kids. They're using the kids the same way the kids are using them. And it's like, you know, you just – I don't know, man. The amount of money that they bring in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, Alabama football – last year, Alabama football had a profit of $46 million. Just Alabama football. And so – and I know that that's not the same for everything. I had an interesting discussion with Cons, who's from Zero Block 30 from Barstool. Nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a good conversation over Twitter, and he was just saying, you know, they just – the majority of sports organizations in the country, colleges, operate in the red. You know, and so they're actually spending more than they're making, which – I mean, I guess, but I'm sorry, you can't tell me, you know, the NCAA pulled in over $1 billion of revenue last year. Mm-hmm. They had $150 million operating profit for all intents and purposes, right? So they made $150 million last year. Mm-hmm. And they can say, oh, yeah, you know, we're going to give it to this and do that with it. And, you know, look at the facilities these teams have. Some of these facilities are better than the pro facilities.
I was just going to bring that up. You know, Nicole, my lovely, beautiful girlfriend sitting in the other room, she went to Florida State, and she was there during the Jameis years. And after they won the national championship, they built this beautiful facility. I'm talking state-of-the-art. And they literally went to Jimbo Fisher and said, blank check, put whatever you want in there.
Right.
You know,
and that's
the
thing. They have that kind of money. They can do those things. I mean, the top 20 college coaches, college football coaches, all make like the low, like number 20 makes like, it's like $5 or $6 million.
Oh, yeah. Like Shaka Smart or somebody like that. Yeah.
Well, I'm just talking about football. Now, basketball, oh, yeah, right, I think number 20 is like $3 million or something like that. But then you got like 20 football assistants that make over $1 million. It's just like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, you know, what's and going back to
Brian Daboll was making like $2 million as a coordinator for Alabama. You know what I mean?
And that's the thing is that you look at it and just say, they're getting this much money, you know, and I understand the coaches do a lot and they do the recruiting and everything else, but it's like, shit, man, like, you know, we gotta give these kids some of this money. And the kids are getting money. I mean, let's not kid ourselves here. The kids are getting taken care of. Now, whether they're getting money, whether they're getting whatever, like, it's happening because
those kids can't say it's not because,
and this is the thing, right? This is really the issue. If there really was that much of an issue where these kids were like struggling and not getting any money, Ed O'Bannon wouldn't be the only one talking about it.
Right.
He's the only one that brings up anything. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, why aren't more of these players saying we really should get paid when we're in college because they're working basically a full-time job. And people say, well, they go to college for free. Well, that's fine. Well, if you get an academic scholarship, you go for free too.
Mm-hmm.
But the college doesn't make any money off you. Now, maybe when you get older and you have a great job because you're super smart and so they, you know, they could say, well, that person went to school,
you get
a booster, right? But it's like, but no, these guys, they go to school for free, but they're working full-time as well. And not only that, but they can't even work anything on the side. Right, Jeremy Bloom gets suspended for a year. I don't know if anyone even remembers who Jeremy Bloom is, but Jeremy Bloom played receiver for right, for Colorado, and he was too good of a skier. So he skied for the U.S. national team, and because the U.S. national team was sponsored, he got kicked off football for a year.
Yep.
And it's like, and then he tried to go pro in the NFL, and he hadn't played football in a year. And I was like, well, of course he's not going to make it in the pros. You know, it's like, you know, so that hampered his career drastically, you know? So it's like, it's stuff like that, that you're just like, come on, like, don't, you know, we don't have to overthink it so much. So that one to me, I was just like, you know, the NCAA to me, it never really had that. Like, cause like you said, we know what's going on, right? It, this is just kind of like a confirmation as to what, as to what's happening out there. So
I think the whole Larry Nassar thing shows you just a tiny bit of how corrupt that organization is. I mean, we could spend hours and hours talking about that and how disgusting it is.
Right.
Those guys,
but they just,
they
just sweep it under the rug. Cause they're like, if it doesn't help me, I don't care.
Yeah. You don't even hear about it anymore. And, you know,
it's just, anyways, do we have anything else?
I don't have anything else.
Any other questions? I think that's it, right? Oh, wait, no, no, no. My dad with a late minute entry. My his question was, how is Bill Russell not considered the greatest basketball player of all time?
I mean, it's true, man. Everybody's always like, oh, you got to talk about rings and championships. I mean, the guy won, like you were saying, 11 championships in essentially 13 seasons, but he was only healthy for 12 of them. It's just, it's fucking ridiculous. It's it's unbelievable how much that guy revolutionized the sport. And all he gets is his name on the finals MVP trophy.
I mean, right? And that's the thing.
That's awesome. Yeah. But that guy should be the logo, you know?
Yeah. I mean, well, look, you know, you talk about the greatest of all time. And if I put, if I went to most basketball fans and I put Russell, not even in the top two, if I put Russell in my top five, I get laughed out of the conversation.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, what else do you want, right? The guy wins 11 championships. He wins two NCAA championships. He wins a gold medal. He's the first African American coach in the history of the NBA. Like, the guy, like, what else do you want the guy to do? Right? Revolutionize the way the center game was played. The guy was so good, right, that he would block a shot, and instead of blocking a shot out of bounds, he would block a shot to a teammate to start a fast break.
Yeah.
It was like, how the hell, like, what?
He would use a block as an outlet pass. Yeah.
It's just like, you know. And so, you know, to me, it's like these kids don't really, and I don't know. I mean, I didn't see him play, but like, I mean, in the 60s, they won the championship every single year except for one.
He's one of those guys, when people ask you, like, who do you wish you'd go back in time and see play at their prime? He's one of them, for sure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because he's just so good. And I know, I think part of the problem is that they're like, okay, but the whole team, I mean, it would be like, it would be like the Warriors now if the Warriors had, you know, LeBron and James Harden, right? And so it's like, right? So it's like they have like the five out of the top seven players in the NBA. And so, like, I get it, but even still, Russell was the best player on that team.
Yep.
So it's like, you know, yes, they were the best team and they won all those games, but he was the best player. And so he doesn't get the credit that he deserves. And it deserved to be mentioned. So
I agree. Russell's going to at least be in your top five. If not, then you don't know basketball.
Right. I mean, you know, I mean, look, I get the Jordans. I understand. I get it. Right. You don't want to say he's the greatest of all time. Fine. He's got to be in the top five. He has to be.
Yeah, for sure.
So, all right. I think that's it, my friend. So let's do the 3 minute drill quickly.
Cool.
And so, yeah. So let's do the 3 minute drill. And then we'll have this week in sports history as well.
Okay.
All right. So let's get the clock up and running here. I got to get set in 3 minutes. All right. So 3 minutes starting now. All right. So I want to talk about Darius Geis here at the Combine. The story, for those of you that haven't heard it, Darius Geis got asked by a team. We don't know what team it was, if he was gay at the Combine.
What a joke.
What
a fucking joke.
How do we still think this is acceptable?
Yeah.
It's just like,
apparently the NFL, quote unquote, looked into it, and there's going to be no penalties assessed.
Of course not, because it's just
unbelievable.
It's just so stupid, and you can't ask that question in a regular job interview, but you can ask it in a job interview for the NFL. It's just like it doesn't make any sense. And look, you could say, well, you know, those guys are alphas, and they couldn't deal with a gay guy, whatever. Dude, if you walk into an NFL locker room, do you know how freaking ridiculously crazy a locker room like that is? You got guys from the South that listen to country music that are, you know, these white hick guys. You got, you know, guys from the hood in, you know, in California and Florida, and guys that are like, mm-hmm. you know, it's just like they're from totally different walks of life,
mm-hmm.
and they all get along in the locker room. What yep. the hell difference does it make if a guy is freaking gay or not? Who the hell cares?
No, it doesn't matter. It literally does not matter. I mean, for fuck's sake, it's 2018. Like,
right.
what do we do? It's just, like you said, there's so many different people from so many different walks of life are in that league now. And it sucks. And it's stuff like this. I'm sure that there's guys in the league who are afraid of coming out, and you know, guys who are in college programs are thinking, oh my God, are they going to, is this what they care about at the pro level and things like that? It's just, guys shouldn't have to go through that ever. Yeah. You know, it's workplace discrimination. It's disgusting. 100%.
Yeah. And you know what it is, what it comes down to is that it also gives the NFL a bad name, because people look at the NFL as like Neanderthals who are like back and, you know, and can't deal with shit like that. Mm-hmm. When in actuality, I don't want to say all of the players, and maybe not even most of the players, but there are quite a few players who are incredibly well-spoken, who can handle things. And mm-hmm. it's just like, you know, it's doing a disservice to all those guys to make it look like that. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, that the whole situation is a stupid situation. And I can't believe that we're still dealing with crap like this, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's lunacy. And so
I wish we knew what team it was. I know it'll probably never come out, but yeah, man, that's really bad. That's such a bad look.
Right. You know? Well, you know what's tough too is that the only guy that came out, right, is Michael Sam. And unfortunately, Michael Sam sucked, right? I mean, that's like, he's just not good, right? So it's like what they need is like for a guy to come out who's like a good player, and then people could say like, oh, here's a guy. Here's a good player. He happens to be gay, but who the hell cares? Right. It doesn't freaking matter, you know.
Yeah. It is unfortunate because I do think that's kind of what it's going to take too, and I think that's unfortunate. But yeah, I think the NFL just has still such that stigma of, you know, being good old boys and you know fucking country kids from Kyle, Texas, whatever, throwing sacks of grain around the train and. Whatever, it's just it's gonna have to move forward somehow, but you know.
So all right, let's move on to this week in sports history. So this week in sports history, I got two for you. The first one, I'm gonna go chronologically, but I'm not gonna do that this time because the second one is the more interesting one, at least as I'm concerned, far as I'm concerned.
Right.
The first one is March 7th, 2001. Drew Bledsoe signs a 10-year $103 million contract with the Patriots. Pretty good. Right. Pretty good. Okay. He plays two games for the Patriots under that contract. And then gets replaced by the greatest quarterback of all time. So maybe wasn't the best contract decision, but it, you know, it is what it is. It's so funny because my father is convinced. My father said to me, he's like, listen, I'm telling you, Pat, if Brady doesn't come in, if Bledsoe doesn't get hurt,
he said this
Brady
to me
would have replaced him by the end of the year. And I'm like, where'd the guy just sign a 10-year deal? That's no way that was happening. You know? Like,
yeah.
I mean, maybe if they're like 0-12, he comes in for the last four games of the season. Like, okay, I can see that. But like, realistically, if they're 8-8 or 9-7, like, there's no freaking way that he's getting benched for Brady. It's just not going to happen.
It's still so amazing how that all shook out.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Numbers wise, Bledsoe was amazing, and I loved Bledsoe. I mean, the whole childhood, right? Everyone loved Bledsoe. Our cousin Mike, dude.
Drew. He still says he was better than Bledsoe.
Yeah. So, but you know, that's the way it goes. You had the Drew people, you had the Brady people, and that was that. So, all right. So my last one that I have is March 9th, 1997, the notorious B.I.G. gunned down in L.A.
Oh, wow.
R.I.P. in peace, B.I.G. Here's my question. Related to this.
Okay.
So Biggie, I think people assume, people say that he's dead, which I agree with.
Uh-huh.
However, his counterpart, who allegedly died a few months earlier, Tupac, do you think Tupac is dead? And if not, do you think he had a hand in killing B.I.G.?
Which one died first, Tupac or Biggie?
Pac died in 96, at the end of 96, and Biggie died a few months later in March of 97.
I think Tupac's dead. R.I.P. in peace, 2PAC. Yeah, I think he's dead. I don't think he's in like Cuba or whatever the fuck people think. I do think it was a retaliatory thing, though.
Yeah.
You know, I think where it was, it's got to be. Yeah, it's way too close for the two biggest rappers in the world to just be like mowed down. It would be like, for whatever reason, you know, Kendrick Lamar and Chance the Rapper, or like Childish Gambino. See, kids, I'm hip. it'd be like if two of them were beefing and they ended up dead within like 5 months of each other. Like, no, too much of a coincidence. You know, yeah. They're both dead. Big dead. You are dead.
Your use of beefing there was fantastic, by the way.
Yeah.
But I think you told it. I mean, look, I would love it if Pac was still alive. That would be the coolest thing ever. Like,
yeah,
just it would be
fun. Yeah. You know, if it was just like, you know, the 20th or like the 30th anniversary of it, and he comes out like all rickety on the Grammys, and people are like, whoa. Well, and then like he gets shot outside the Grammys.
Right? Yeah. That would be nuts, dude. Like, he shows up at the Grammys and then someone kills him.
He gets such a response that he just has a heart attack on stage.
That would be nuts, dude. And he's gone. He just dies. Oh, my Lord, that would be nuts, dude. But, you know, it's funny because if you go down the rabbit hole of, like, people that say that he didn't die, like, they say, okay, this is the last picture that ever got taken, you know, with Tupac in it, but Suge Knight was driving, but it was, like, in the – but the keys weren't in the ignition, so the car wasn't moving, and like, and Tupac wasn't in the driver's seat or something like, or Tupac wasn't in the passenger seat. He was in like the back seat, and that picture, it was just like, there was all these things that like happened where it's like the pictures didn't line up with the actual things that happened. And it's just like anything. I mean, just like Geno Smith going off the deep end and saying that, you know, the earth is flat, and he going out and trying to find it, you know?
Oh, Geno. Like,
down and
I love too that Geno Smith is trying to be like, I'm not saying it's flat, but let's hear him out a little bit. It's like, no, like, we know the world isn't flat. You don't just come back and be like, but what if it isn't? It's like, no,
possible. Well, what if, guys, it could be flat? Well, you never know.
A really good YouTube video. Let's see what he has to say.
Then my favorite part was that he was just like, all right, here I go. I'm going out. I'm going to try to find the end of the edge of the world. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about, dude?
Day 53. Haven't hit the edge yet. Yeah.
What the hell? So it was nuts. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, man. Those conspiracy theories are fun because you listen to some of the shit and they're like, I'm telling you, the earth is flat because of this. And I'm like, what? No. Like, that doesn't make any sense. You know, it's just, oh my God, it's too funny, dude. But the Pac one.
I think Kyrie Irving now has gotten shamed into thinking the earth is round. I think people gave him so much shit that he's like, no, I was just kidding, guys. I didn't ever really believe that.
I'm just joking. Yeah, it was just a joke. It was just a joke. You know, he totally has. He's flipped around on that one. The flat earthers are not pleased with Kyrie Irving right now. So, but I tell you, it's funny, dude. Those rabbit, I mean, shit, those conspiracy theories are fun. And the Tupac one is fun because it's like, everyone knows the earth is round, right? Like, we don't really believe the earth is flat. But if you show me enough videos, I'm like, that guy makes a compelling case. And then I'm like, wait a second. No, he doesn't. The earth isn't fucking flat. You know what I mean? But if it's about Tupac not being dead, I'm like, well, I didn't see Tupac being dead, right? And so it's like,
they haven't sold it
like,
yet.
Then it's like the autopsy photo is like, you know, it looks like the same. You know, you don't actually see any blood because, well, why would there be blood at the autopsy? But that's what they say, right? And then it looks like the same you know, makeup that was used in one of his like videos and all this shit. And he like predicts it in his thing that he's going to like die, but not really die. And it's like, but like you go down the rabbit hole and you're like, oh my God, dude, it could be true. It's true. He's living in fucking like, Jamaica always, though, like, right now. You know what I mean?
Why would they like somebody like Elvis or him? Like, why would they fake their death? Like, what debt do they have to like the fucking government or whatever that they're like, all right, you got to go live in like Podunk, Montana for the rest of your life?
Well, and, so what's crazy about the podcast?
Your name is Nick Papa Giorgio. You
know? What's crazy about it is that like there's like a whole theory that he is another rapper, I think, called like Machiavelli. And so like, you know, he released an album called Machiavelli, and then there was a
rapper.
So it's like this whole thing where it's like, you know, he left being Tupac, but then he became Machiavelli, and Machiavelli sounds a lot like Tupac. It's like, it's crazy, dude. It's like you know, when you talk about singer wise, right? It's like the Paul McCartney one, the Avril Lavigne one, right? And then the Tupac one, and all three of them, you're like, oh my God, like it happened. It's true. You know, the Avril one is 100% true. She's dead and they got someone to replace her. Like that's definitely.
She got wiped off the face of the planet in 2003.
Yeah.
The Paul McCartney one just makes me think of the Chris Farley show sketch where he has Paul McCartney on and he's doing you guys had that song where like, people said you were dead, and then if you play it backwards, it said Paul is dead. And he's got Paul McCartney sitting next to him. He goes, "That was a hoax, right?" Paul McCartney goes, "Yeah, no, I wasn't really dead."
Oh goodness. Anyways, all right, we've gone on far too long, but it's been fun. So I think that's it. So Tupac is maybe alive, but probably dead. Avril Lavigne, definitely dead. Paul McCartney, probably not dead. Just in case you're following along at home.
Yeah, no, Paul McCartney's alive. I saw him at Fenway, and that guy can still rip it up. He looks like a bag of bones at this point. He's not as cute as he used to be, but no, Paul's alive, not dead.
All right, okay, I like it. Yeah. All right, so you can follow us, or follow me at least. So Artie is still not on Twitter. Can you believe this bullshit, people? Like,
as hip as I am by naming off all these rappers and using the term beefing, I'm such a Twitter holdout, man. If you guys want to follow me on Instagram, it's at RDJ1120, but I don't know what you would want to see. It's
follow Artie on Instagram and then shame him into getting a Twitter account.
Yeah, that's what you're just going to see a bunch of pictures of like brisket and dogs in Austin, so you're not going to see a lot.
It's pretty fantastic. I mean, show you how much your life sucks that you're not eating freaking barbecue in Texas.
Yeah. So everybody come down, visit me. Maybe come down in person and convince me to get a Twitter account.
All right.
And I'll buy you a donut and brisket.
I think that's a good plan.
Yeah.
Look at that. See? It's a win-win-win. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the third win, but definitely two wins. So anyways, I am Pat Lane, if you didn't know that. On Twitter, it's at Weekend War Pod, no E's. So WKNDWARPOD. And I'm also WTP Lane created a personal account. That's what it's called.
Ooh.
Personal account as well.
I like the play on the P Lane, WTP Lane.
No doubt. See what I'm doing there?
I'm still there.
I'll pretend like that was intentional, but nevertheless. at Weekend War Pod, at WTP Lane. And again, follow us on Instagram, same name. We're on Facebook. But definitely reach out on iTunes. Give us a review. Rate, subscribe, and review. And we'd appreciate it. You're already listening, so we appreciate that. But if you can listen on there, we're on Stitcher as well. Pretty much anywhere you can listen to podcasts is where we are. So, except for like Spotify, because they only choose the best ones, and somehow we're not one of the best ones. But that's the way it goes.
Bullshit, man. Boycott Spotify.
I know. That's what I'm saying, dude. So I don't have to boycott Spotify because I don't have a Spotify account. So I guess I am kind of boycotting them by not having one? I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways. All right. Anyways, I've gone on rambling way too long. So we're out. I think that's all we got. Thanks for listening. And we will be back next week. There's been rumblings already that it's possible there might be two shows next week. I don't know for sure.
Ooh.
There have been rumblings.
Okay.
Definitely have one interview set up for next week. Possibly a second one coming as well. Could be two Weekend Warrior episodes next week. That's you never know.
Satellite offshoot podcast.
So we'll see.
A little March Madness, if you will.
Perhaps. Oh, okay. Look at that. See? Mm-hmm. All right. So that's all we got, people. So enjoy. Selection Sunday is this Sunday. Get your brackets in. Get filling them out. Hopefully you win, but you probably won't. Oh, probably, a little math for you before we leave.
Oh boy,
I do this with my students because I teach math. The bracket, in order to fill out the perfect bracket, you have a 1 in 9 quintillion chance of filling out the perfect bracket. A quintillion is a number with 18 zeros. It's not very good. You don't have a very good chance of doing it. As a matter of fact, what's his face? The super rich guy. One of them. I don't know which one it is. Warren Buffett, I think, offered mm-hmm. all of his employees $1 million, just $1 million in cash, if they could get everything, I think, to the Final Four right, but every game. And he's been doing it for like 7 or 10 years, and no one's even come close. So
you're telling me there's a chance.
You never know. If you took the time out to fill up nine quintillion different, it would take you like 10,000 years, but
yeah,
eventually you'd have the right one. So anyways, just a little food for thought there. And thanks for listening to our rambling, but we had it fun. So thanks for coming on.
Thank you guys.
Love to do it again.
Yeah, I haven't been on in a while. It's been a blast, man. I got to get back on more often. Yeah, I like this whole recurring host thing. I can do that.
It's good. Yeah, it's good. So, all right. Well, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Listen and rock to what it is that you want. Warriors, you'll need to tune in.